Coming up, Lav and I talk about what we learned last week in Los Angeles and who needs to work on something before we get to Augusta National. Welcome to the Golf Central Podcast, brought to you by the new P770 from TaylorMade. Why practice a draw if you've got a fade? If you can hit it high, why master the stinger? Because the key to better golf is having options you can count on. That's why TaylorMade took everything they learned, making P790, the forged face, the speed foam, and all its DNA, and put it into a smaller package. Introducing P770. Let the sibling rivalry begin. Available at your local golf retailer or TaylorMadeGolf.com. Use promo code GOLFCHANNEL for free 2-day shipping on any other order. Lav, I want to talk about the Zozo Championship and what we learned from that, but getting right to it, and I don't know really how much we learned from this, but I want to touch on Tiger Woods simply because on Sunday, before I left Los Angeles, I was taken on Sunday as Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson sat on the tee about to tee off, about a million strokes out of the lead in a rain. It was gloomy. There were no fans. They got their butts handed to them by someone named Adam Long head to head. And it struck me that this is probably the last time that we're going to see them paired together on a Sunday on the PGA Tour. And in my mind, going through that, it was an anticlimactic end to, look, we can call it one of the best rivalries in golf, and I know it is, but over the course of their history, they haven't had many head-to-head Sundays.
They haven't. I mean, Doral in 05 was probably the best one. They met 2012 at Pebble Beach when Phil dusted Tiger in the last round. That was kind of the turning point, I think, in their relationship. Are you saying they're never going to play again on Sunday on the PGA Tour? I think they're going to play together. Now, they're not going to be vying for the title, but they could be in a position like they were at the Zozo Championship, where they're just playing out the string on what was yet another disappointing week.
No, I think there is that opportunity, and there's going to be plenty of times when they get paired together on Thursday and Friday, because there's going to be tournaments that are just starved for attention, and that's the way to get attention, because everyone's going to want to tune in and see that simply because it's entertaining. And again, I'll go back to, this is one of the best rivalries in golf. I mean, we can sit here.
It's one of the only rivalries in golf.
No, I'm talking more in the history of golf. Golf wasn't invented in 1996, so I think we need to look beyond that. Certainly, Gary and Jack.
It was a pretty one-sided rivalry.
It was, but I think towards the end, and I'm going to call it right now and say this is towards the end, Phil made a game out of it. I mean, you talked about 2012, and he absolutely wore Tiger out at Pebble Beach on Sunday to win that event. And so I think later in his career, Phil got a better handle on it. Now, there's other things that factored into this as well. But the one thing that I came away with is, yeah, they might end up with another one of these Sunday pairings where they're way out of the lead and teeing off on number 10 in a rain paired with Adam Long. However, it only happened 10 times in their career where they were even paired together on a Sunday in the PGA Tour. That's 2.5 decades. So the math just wasn't there to begin with, even when they were in their prime. So I find it very, very unlikely that it's going to happen. Certainly not with a title on the line, but no, I don't think we're going to see that again. It seems clear at this point that Phil Mickelson is more comfortable leaning towards the PGA Tour champions. And we can talk about that going into the Masters. And I just don't know, when you look at Tiger Woods and he was going through the motions last week at the Zozo Championship, clearly with Augusta on his mind, I just don't see how it happens, especially with anything meaningful on the line.
Yeah, like last week at Sherwood, where Tiger's a five-time winner, a five-time runner-up in limited field action, Phil Mickelson is obviously comfortable playing in California. They were terrible last week. 77 players competed all four rounds. Phil Mickelson finished 76th. Tiger Woods finished in a tie for 72nd. We can look at all the stats you want, but what were your impressions on the ground? Let's start with Tiger. What were your takeaways? It was the first time we've seen him in a month when he missed the cut and shot 10 over at Wingfoot. Apparently, he complained later of having some back stiffness that week. To me, that was the least of his issues. What was your takeaway seeing Tiger for the first time in a month?
Terrible. Don't hold back, Lab. Just go right at him. Just
they
terrible.
Were. By any metric, they were putrid last week.
They were awful. And they would both agree to that. I mean, if we're in, this is the way I wanted to spin this forward. Let's kind of go through it and say what someone needs to do before they get to the Masters. I'll start with Tiger because he's the easiest one, because he went through it for us on Sunday afternoon when we asked him what he needed to work on. And he essentially went through every aspect of his game except for putting. Putting was the only thing that he walked away from Sherwood thinking, okay, I'm somewhere close. But the one thing that stands out, and this goes to last year, and we're going to continue to touch on this because it was the epiphany moment going into the Masters last year that something clicked and he was able to start hitting that high draw with regularity. And he got some confidence with it really in the days leading up to Augusta National last year. And that's what he was looking for. It wasn't there. And I thought Brandel Chambly made a great point of saying that if you looked at the way he was trying to play that golf course, even on holes where he clearly just should have hit that sort of hold off cut fade that he's become very, very adept at, he would still try to hit the high draw because he was trying to force it. He was trying to get himself into a mood that even under pressure, he can perform this like he needs to at Augusta. He did not. His iron play was awful. His play around the greens was awful. So he pretty much needs to shore up everything in the 2 weeks before then. Now he clung to the notion that he might add the Houston Open to his schedule, that this is going to be dated probably by the time this podcast gets posted, because I got the impression he's going to make a decision soon. And I didn't think he was going to add.
To me, that didn't make any sense. He'd be heading to a golf course that he's never seen before. He'd have to relearn it. That would cut into his Augusta prep time. To me, this isn't a competitive reps issue. To me, it just boils down to the simple fact that he's not swinging very well. This is what we've seen post-pandemic break. Like, his irons haven't been sharp. His driver, he has a two-way miss. His putting, we've well documented on this podcast, has dipped significantly. Last week at a golf course that was pretty easy, It was pretty easy. Rex, you saw winning scores in the 20s. Tiger Woods' strokes gained tee to green was 70th out of 77 players, and he may have been encouraged by his putting. I'm not sure where he's getting that sense of optimism from, since he was 65th on the greens. To me, he needs to just spend the next 2 weeks on the range trying to sort out his swing. I'm not sure if his body can allow that. That's always going to be the problem with Tiger, is that can he put in the hours on the range and the time necessary and the energy necessary in order to fix things. But to me, he can have all of this institutional course knowledge at Augusta and know exactly where to hit it. But if he can't actually execute the shots and hit it where he's looking, then it really doesn't matter, because he doesn't stand a chance.
He does not. And I'll say, outside of his putting, just his body language, his demeanor, he does look like he's somewhere close to being healthy, at least the first thing we've seen healthy in quite a long time. He was moving well last week. It was cold. It was kind of drizzly. It wasn't the best of conditions for someone with multiple back surgeries, but
it's going to be cold at Augusta too.
It's going to be very cold at Augusta. I'm starting to get that impression. However, I'll fall back on the golf writer cliche, which he is what his record says he is right now. And that's not a very good golfer. Jumping very, very quickly to Phil, because I think we're going to be under the same mindset. Similarly, awful, terrible. The experiment with the two wood not going well, the experiment with the driver trying the 47.5-inch shaft not going well, he didn't seem sharp around the greens. Again, another interesting scenario where he's toying with the idea of maybe playing Houston the week before the Masters, which is what he normally does, or he's holding out that he may play the PGA Tour Champions event that week in Arizona. When I talked to him on Saturday, he kind of went through the list of pros and cons for me, and I won't bore you with those details. But he did sound like he was leaning towards the Champions Tour, which is fascinating to me.
I think that is actually the best tune-up for him. Just like Tiger's probably never seen Memorial Park, this is a golf course that Phil has never seen before. By all accounts, it's going to have a stiffer penalty for a missed fairway than playing on a senior event would be in Phoenix, where it can just be bombs away with short rough and oversee the grass, which is what he's going to see at Augusta National. Phil just needs to roll into Augusta with confidence. And quite frankly, he hasn't shown anything against the Young Bucks on the PGA Tour to suggest that he's close to a breakthrough there. So if he can go to a senior event and wail away and get some mojo going with the driver and make some birdies and start to feel good about himself, to me, that would do him more good than having an early exit in Houston and getting a head start on his Augusta itinerary. I think he just needs to feel good. He's not going to wear himself down with 54 holes in a cart on the PGA Tour Champions. To me, that's the best move. I still don't think he's clicking in enough aspects of his game to make him a serious threat to win the Masters this year, despite how well he's played against the guys on the over 50 circuit.
And I think there is something to be said for the idea that winning sort of breeds more winning, right? So he is the alpha male. He wants to get out and be the center of attention, and he's able to do that with the over 50 set. And then I think you're right. That gives him some sort of boost going into Augusta, but that's not going to help when that golf course is playing impossibly long in November against these players. We're all waiting to see what Bryson's going to do with the 48 inch driver.
He's carrying it 400 yards without the 48 inch driver. What did you make of that?
There was a caveat. I don't want to dig too deep into this because there was
the 20 mile an hour downwind.
Downwind.
Okay. So it's still going 375 in the air.
I don't know. And I would, again, defer to having done a couple shows last week with Brando. And I think he did a really brilliant job on Saturday of breaking this down, where he made the argument, and statistically, it was very, very sound, that in his prime, Bubba Watson going head to head with Bryson DeChambeau right now would beat Bryson DeChambeau on the 13th hole in a driving contest simply because he was better. He was that much better. He was that much better statistically than Bryson DeChambeau is right now. You could say the same thing certainly about Rory McIlroy when he set the standard for strokes gained tee to green back when he was in his prime. I understand where everyone is going with this. I get how we're going to get fascinated when he puts those silly pictures up on social media, forgetting to mention that it was a 20 mile an hour downwind, forgetting that it is on a range.
It's still going really far.
It's still going really far, but that's not the point that Brando was making. And I totally agree with this, that it's not that 200 mile an hour ball speed. That's the impressive thing. The impressive thing is how he's improved every other aspect of his game. And he likes being the center of that long ball attention. He enjoys that. He's fostering it. However, I think he's doing himself a disservice by not allowing people to realize how much better he has gotten statistically, certainly around the greens, certainly on the greens. All of these aspects need to be factored in as a whole. And I just think we get too much. There's too much. The level of fascination on how his ball speed, his swing speed, how far he's carrying it, I just think it's silly at this point.
It is. It's gotten a little out of control. And look, he didn't win at Wingfoot because he hit it further than everyone else. Matthew Wolf on a number of holes hit it further than Bryson DeChambeau did. Bryson won the U.S. Open because his iron play was outstanding. And once again, he proved that he's a top 10 putter on the PGA Tour. You put all of that together, then you're going to have a U.S. Open champion. So when you look ahead to Augusta, he might be able to hit at 350. He might be able to hit at 375 and just have some stupid numbers into some of these holes that we've come to expect are going to be playing quite difficult for the guys. But if he's not wedging it close, and if he's not putting well, it's not really going to matter. When we talk about Bryson and the 48 inch driver, I will still say, and I want to be on record as saying this, that I still think it is an unnecessary risk for him to put that driver in play at the Masters. This is a rushed experiment that he doesn't have enough time to see how it's going to play in a tournament setting. This is something I'd love to see him do at Kapalua, maybe Torrey Pines, certainly in Phoenix. I'd like to see it for the 2021 Masters, but for this fall Masters with only a month to try and work it in, it just seems unnecessary. He's clearly hitting it far enough. I just think that extra edge he's going to gain is not going to be worthwhile. I just want to be on record as saying that, Rex.
On record, please clip that, Simon, because if he's going to choose to walk to the edge of the plank, we might as well just allow him to push himself into the deep abyss simply because when Bryson ends up winning the Masters by 12 strokes. Thank you, Simon, on the record. I don't want to focus on Bryson. Do me a favor, I'm kind of throwing this at you. When you look at last week's leaderboard, give me two players that gave you enough confidence heading to Augusta where you would walk back out on that plank that you love to live on and say, yes, these two should be numbers 1 and 2 on the list of favorites.
1 and 2 on the list of favorites. Okay. Well, sure. Bryson's the favorite. And I think even though Justin Thomas's record isn't great,
he didn't play last week, but all right.
Yeah. And even though Justin Thomas's record at Augusta isn't great, I would still put him securely in that top five. I'm curious to see how Dustin Johnson plays next week in Houston. Surely he's finished in the top six in each of his last five starts, hasn't played in more than a month now, obviously because of scheduling and then the COVID issue. Two players, Rex, I did want to talk about who I'm not sure they're necessarily going to sneak up on you, but Rory McIlroy made 29 birdies last week at Sherwood. If he can minimize some of the...
And he was mad he didn't make 30, by the way. He was angry that he didn't get to 30, yeah.
But if he can just minimize some of the costly mistakes that he's making, which I think just come down to focus, I think he'll be okay. And I think you mentioned Bubba Watson. Bubba Watson, two-time Masters champion, tied for fourth last week at Sherwood. Per stats guru Justin Ray, Bubba Watson has gained more than anyone else in golf besides Dustin Johnson strokes gained tee to green since the PGA Championship. This is a guy who's playing some really good golf. His putting is always going to be shaky, but if he can just hold it together for 4 days, I think Bubba Watson is a super sleepy sneaker, sneaky,
spit it out.
A sleepy, sneaky sleeper pick for the Masters. A sleepy, sneaky pick for the Masters. If you're doing a Masters pool,
did you go with it now?
He's like a perfect group three or group four pick in your Masters pool, Bubba Watson.
I don't know how sneaky he is. And the reason I kind of wanted to get you to focus on too, because I Bubba was one of the players I focused on for a number of reasons. And obviously his play tee to green, impressive last week. On, let's face it, if there's any part of Sherwood that was difficult, you did have to shape some shots. And he loves to do that. And there's just a level of confidence. I talked to him on Friday, and you know, I was just kind of touching base on some things about Augusta and sort of his thoughts on what it's going to be like without the fans. And I was amazed how his face just lit up, just the idea of going out there. And it dawned on me halfway through his answer that if anyone is going to benefit from not having any patrons on property at the Masters, it's going to be Bubba, because let's face it, he gets distracted easy. Bright and shiny things get his attention going down fairways, and he has a hard time. I mean, his poor caddy has to work really hard to keep him in every single shot. And you have the idea that this is the Masters where he has, we all know his record. I mean, it's all or nothing there. And when it's all, he usually slips on a green jacket. And now he doesn't have those bright and shiny things outside the ropes to get his attention, to get him outside of that competitive mindset. I think it's a perfect combination for him. And you talk to other players, and they're not happy. I mean, Tiger Woods is clearly not happy with the idea of playing the Masters without fans. They're going to do it. They love the idea of just being able to play the Masters, but it's going to be so starkly different that a lot of guys are going to have a hard time. They're going to struggle with it. I think it's going to be the opposite with Bubba. I think he's going to go out and he's going to relish this. It's essentially just going to be playtime with him and his caddy out on the golf course, and they won't have all of those things that sort of get him into this bad mindset. The other guy, and I don't know, you're not going to like this, so I'll leave the floor
open to you after. Is it Wolfie?
It is not Wolfie. I did enjoy Wolfie last week, simply because being close to his home, having a swing coach there. I actually went by the golf course, the West Lakes golf course, where, you know, he sort of cut his teeth. And what a cool spot. You know what I mean?
Did you hit balls off the
I did.
Big turf?
I did, just because I wanted to get the experience for no other reason. I mean, it was dark and you know, I just wanted to go out there and get a feel for it. But no, the guy I was going to lean into was Patrick Reed. And for a lot of different reasons, but I had a chance to talk with him last week. And again, here's a guy who is all or nothing at Augusta, and he has the green jacket. He knows how to play that golf course. But when I spoke with his caddy, he talked about this is the exact mindset he was in before he won his green jacket, that he was building and trending in the right direction. And the way he's driving the ball and the way he's hitting his irons so crisp. I think both of those guys, and you put him in the third and fourth category if we're going to do some sort of draft heading into the Masters, I would go higher with both those guys. I mean, they're probably not my first pick, but they would definitely be my second pick.
I mean, Bubba's barely inside the top 50 in the world rankings. To me, that's a perfect group three or group four guy. I mean, he's going to be under the radar. I'm not sure you'd necessarily put Bubba in your top 10.
Are we doing a snake draft?
We're going to do that next week, Rex. Let's not tease too much.
It's going to be snake draft, right?
But I would put Patrick Reed in a top 10 favorites. You look at what he's done over his last four events. He was tied for seventh at the Tour Championship when you look at the 72 hole scores. T13 at the U.S. Open, of course, where he led after 36 holes. T3 across the pond, came all the way back over on the West Coast. What's that? A 8-hour time difference, and finished T14 with a Friday 63. I think especially if the conditions at Augusta become more difficult, if we see something closer to a 2007 when Zach Johnson won with a winning score that was over par. I don't think it's necessarily going to get that hard, but if we see something single digits under par winning, that's right up Patrick Reed's alley. I would agree with you that he's definitely a name to watch, and he's definitely a player I would put in my top 10 favorites.
And a preview story that I'm working on is what can we expect at Augusta National playing in November? And I'm getting a lot of this. I'm getting a lot of, it's the year Zach Johnson won, which we all remember. It was cold. It was hard. The wind was howling. No one seemed to want to go for par fives and two. It really mitigated the power advantage that year. Therefore, Zach Johnson won. So I will be fascinated. Before we move on, there is two names. John Rahm is one that would come up simply because, I mean, he played brilliantly last week. He did not win. As he usually does in this situation. And I just think him going to the Masters, he has that creativity around the greens that we know the Spaniards seem to take to Augusta National. And he has that fire. And the way he's striking the ball right now, I think he would be foolish to ignore him. And we'll get into that more as we go down the list. The other was Tony Finau. That was his first start last week since his COVID scare. He ended up finishing tied for 11th. He's a guy who's had success at Augusta National. I simply think there's so many players that are trending in that direction right now.
Yeah, I like the way that the field is shaping up here. I think, Bryson, you have to put him as the favorite just because of, if nothing else, it gives us something to talk about. But the way that he's played over the past several months, the way that he played at the U.S. Open, certainly, the way he played at the Shriners and then taking a month off. But we haven't even talked about Patrick Cantlay, the guy who actually won the Zozo Championship. He's still a top 10 player in the world. He's one of the most complete players all around, no weaknesses in his game. We've barely touched on Justin Thomas. I mean, there's a lot of players in the mix. If Bryson doesn't necessarily have his A game and doesn't overpower Augusta National like he certainly thinks that he's going to be able to.
We have not, but we have plenty of time to get into it. However, I do have to cut you off because you have duties this afternoon, apparently. East Lake Cup, who do you like? Since that's where you're heading to. You're heading into the office, which you haven't been in since when?
So I was in there a couple weeks ago, but that was my first time since February.
Do me a favor. I have a hat, an Orioles hat on my desk. Can you grab that for me? Because I don't know that I'm ever going back in that office.
I already took your Augusta National parking pass. It looked like you had a couple other books on there that I'd love to swipe and then put on the shelf that's behind me. But sure, I can do that solid.
Yeah, do me that. And then East Lake Cup, you've got duties this week, so I've got to let you off the hook on the podcast. But who do you like? Who are we talking about tonight?
I like Oklahoma.
No one cares.
What? I like Oklahoma and Pepperdine to face off in the championship on the men's side. And on the women's side, I'll go South Carolina and Ole Miss with a little SEC flavor.
All right. Tune into the East Lake Cup. That's on Golf Channel. That'll do it for this Golf Central podcast. We'll see you next week.